And hello. Thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z here on Progressive Radio Network. We're so happy that you join us and all the feedback we get from all over the country. I am presently doing a lecture tour in southern Florida, a good place to be this time of year, that's for sure, because I am not a cold weather person. And everywhere I go, they're listening to Progressive Radio Network, and they're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And thank you, all of you who have showed up at the many, many lectures that we are giving here, most of which are free and open to the public. And if you know anyone in South Florida, you can go to naturalnurse.com and click on Schedules. Right on naturalnurse.com, and you will see a list of exact places and locations of where we're doing live on-ground presentations daily. And so we're so happy to be doing that. And, of course, that continues all over the country and all over the world. We are now actually making the reservations for our March 15th journey to live with shamanic healers in the jungles of Jamaica. And if any of you would like to join in, please get in touch because we have many participants already and we have a room for a few more. And you can see more on our website. Go to naturalnurse.com and then click Echo Tours for Cures to Jamaica to find out more. It's extremely reasonable and you can get college credits for living with shamanic bush doctors in the jungle in the north coast of Jamaica. So that's something that you certainly may want to, tune into and join in with. So we'd love to see you there. And we're going to have a great show today. We're going to bring on our guest. And she's written a wonderful book on a topic that I'm sure you will be interested in because it does impact your health. And that is Lynn Farrow. And Lynn wrote a very interesting book. She is a journalist, researcher, former college professor, and speaker. And her own experience with breast cancer led her to discover that someone had stolen the information about a medicine with proven benefits reaching back 15,000 years. A medicine that not only helped her, but has helped millions. And we will be discussing today with her her book, The Iodine Crisis. What you don't know about iodine can wreck your life. So thank you so much for being with us today, Lynn.
Well, it's great to be here, and it's cheery to hear that someone's in a nice, warm location.
Yes, and you know, I have to tell you, Lynn, that's not by accident, because and I recommend everybody, you know, we're at the top of the year. We're still in January, only for a few more days. And in terms of New Year's resolutions, one thing that myself and my business partner, Dr. Eugene Zamperon, do is we have a vision meeting every year. And we actually write down all the things we accomplished from the year before. And I have to be honest and share that it doesn't completely match the to-do list, our wish list that we had from the year before. But at least we feel good about the things we did accomplish. And then we write a new vision list about where we see we will be a year later. And we've been doing this all the years of our business partnership, which is 25 years. And it's amazing that I have to say we have manifested every single vision that we have laid out over the years. Maybe not on our timeline of that year, but somewhere along the line, even if it's 5 or 10 or 15 years. And one of my visions has always been to be able to be, what originally inspired me is the line in that song is, where the weather suits my clothes. And so I only have summer clothes. Okay, so that's the ticket. So I have created, through hard work, through vision, through planning, and of course waiting for my children to grow up, you know, that takes 20 years or so, once you have those kids, you have to work around them, to be able to, and how I did it, is by having two very, very small, inexpensive living places. One in Florida, one in Arizona, and one in New York. And that way I can travel, be where I would like to be, and yet, of course, then came on board all this internet stuff, which didn't even exist when I created the vision, that really allows me to continue with my work wherever I am and yet stay comfortable in terms of temperature. So it, I am lucky, but it's not just luck. It has to do with planning and hard work. That's what I always tell people, and they go, oh, you're so lucky. You know, I honor that. I am fortunate, and I grace God with, you know, the blessings that I have. But it didn't just happen. It happens through visioning and through working. And I'm sure that you found that true in terms of writing your wonderful book, The Iodine Crisis. How many people have even said to you, oh, how did you even write a book? And why don't you tell us, how did you do it? Because it's a beautiful piece of information and a work of art.
Well, thank you, Ellen. I wrote the book. First of all, I was waiting for someone else to write the book. Dr. Brownstein had written an excellent book on iodine, but I wanted to write one from a patient-to-patient perspective. Plus, I had done a whole lot of independent research. And I thought people, as I did the research, people, I realized they didn't know how far back iodine as a nutrient went, that it's probably the oldest traditional medicine that we have, going back at least 15,000 years.
Well, so that's a big statement. Hold on. First of all, you used the word I love. You said traditional medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you say that?
The reason I said traditional is, first of all, I started looking back just 100 years ago when the element iodine was discovered in the early 1800s. And then I found, wait, if you go back further, you can find out that they had this in the Middle Ages. And if you go back further, you can find that the Egyptians were using seaweed for breast cancer. And I thought, you know, I wonder if I can go back further than the Egyptians, because this is on their scroll and their medical papyruses or papyri or whatever they're called. All this is documented. So I looked in the prehistoric research, and I found that they had uncovered in the lowest part of Chile a medical hut that was filled with medicinal seaweeds, different kinds used for different things. And some of these seaweeds are, first of all, they're used there now, but they've also been processed so you could buy them in vitamin shop. They've been around so long. So the same thing that people used 15,000 years ago, you can now buy on the corner.
So now iodine now, of course, is something that's like an isolate that people can purchase. So by traditional medicine, do you mean that it was like naturally occurring in a seaweed or something
like
that?
Yes, it was naturally occurring. And the most concentrated form was in seaweed and sponges. And even years ago when they didn't know what was in the sponges, they would burn the seaweed or the sponges and get the ash and give the ashes to people who had goiters, for example, which is an iodine deficiency disease. But then as the years progressed, they were able to isolate from burnt seaweed the element iodine, because one of Napoleon's gunpowder makers, that's how he discovered it. He was trying to make gunpowder, poured a little sulfuric acid on the burnt seaweed, and there emerged the element iodine. That's when it was identified and invented. So it was sort of separated out from the seaweed, and then it became, in the 1800s, the most used medicine because it was good for so many things.
And what are some of the things that they used it for?
Well, the big thing during the 1800s was lung disease, for one thing. There was a lot more than we have now. It seems to have a kind of affinity for the lungs. But it was also used a lot in breast cancer. They would paint, and they would also paint it on the breast for if you had breast pain, which was even back then people had fibrocystic breast disease. It was used for goiter. It was used for prostate. It was put into suppositories for prostate disorders. And just a lot of metabolic disorders, it seemed to help. And there's pictures of people before and after taking iodine where you can see that the iodine deficient people had a kind of puffiness in their face. Sometimes the outer eyebrow wouldn't be there, but just a general sluggishness and puffiness. And also they were always cold. That's sort of a pretty standard thing. Not everybody, but most people that are iodine deficient are cold.
Let's go back and review some of that. For instance, let's look at what, first of all, that picture on the front cover of the iodine crisis. What is that? A little vial that's being broken?
No, it's a broken salt shaker.
Okay.
I think maybe in the next edition I should put a better salt shaker, or have the artist do that. The reason is because we're under the delusion that salt that's iodized is all we really need. And the fact is, maybe in 1924 when salt was iodized, that would have been fine. But since then, since the 1970s, when the iodine was taken out of bread and replaced with bromide, which is an anti-iodine, our iodine levels have dropped 50%. And then you add to that bromide fire retardants, and you have like bang, 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 a perfect storm, three different bullet points there that add up that we're getting now 50% less iodine than we did 30 or 40 years ago. There's also a huge rise in thyroid cancer and breast cancer and just other metabolic disorders.
So what do you mean by, the fact that it's a crisis? Because it is in salt, right?
Yes.
We do find it in salt, and people use salt.
There's something that I really tried to address in my book, because I discovered this by accident. Some scientists had published on exactly what is in salt. Now, they put the iodine in salt at the factory, but by the time it gets to your supermarket, it's lost half. And then by the time it gets to your house, it's lost more. And then once it's opened for 2 weeks, there's a negligible amount in there. And most people that have iodized salt, you say, well, when did you buy that canister of salt? And they'll say, oh, yeah, a year and a half ago. So it really doesn't work to supplement iodine through salt. It's a kind of scam, or it's something that the government has said is adequate, but they're not factoring in the fact that iodine, in quotes, evaporates from salt. But it also is the wrong kind of, if you're going to fortify a food, salt is the wrong food to fortify. Wheat was fine because it was absorbed more. They could find if you took a few slices of bread, they could isolate a certain amount of iodine in your urine, where if you take it in salt, the chloride in the salt competes with the iodine, so you only get 10% of what you took in do you absorb. So that's why the broken salt shaker is on the cover, because the iodine salt notion that's all you need is completely wrong, and it's dangerous.
So first of all, it makes people feel like they're getting enough iodine, and it's actually not the correct. Now, see, that happens often because, let's say, fluoride. They talk about fluoride that they add to water, and the kind of fluoride they use is stannous fluoride, which is actually a very, very highly toxic form of fluoride that has all kinds of negative effects, such as fluoridosis, which can turn teeth black.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's so much misinformation once things get commercialized. So are you saying that the chemical actually form of the iodine that is used when it's added to salt is really not the kind that the body needs?
No, it's iodide, which is not the best form of iodine for women. You would probably want to have more iodine. But the problem with salt is that it's sodium chloride. The chloride competes with the iodine, just like the fluoride would compete with the iodine. They're both in the same chemical family of halides. And there's a mechanism called competitive inhibition where they all try to get to the right receptors. And as it stands, the chlorine, fluorine, bromide are all beating up on the iodine. That's why it's a crisis, especially because iodine was removed from bread 40 years ago.
Okay, so would it be wise to put it back in bread? I mean, I'm not a big fan of people eating bread to begin with, truthfully.
Yes, but I'm just saying, years ago, when your average Wonder Bread family in the 50s had it, they would be unlikely that they would have iodine deficiency just because they were getting essentially a small iodine tablet in the bread every day.
Even though it's like really a horrible, horrible kind of bread.
Yes, even though it's the worst food you could possibly put in yourself, at least it had that particular nutrient that didn't purge the existing iodine in your bloodstream and in your tissues.
Now, why is that? Why, when it was added to bread, was it more effective in terms of providing the right amount and the right kind of iodine?
Because, that's a great question, because it's better in bread than salt because there's no chloride competing with iodine in bread, whereas in salt, they sort of cancel each other out a little bit. In bread, if you measure the iodine going in and you measure the iodine going out, you can see that you're absorbing 90% more with bread if given the same amount of iodine.
So when you say you see, have there actually been studies on this?
Yes, they take the urine of people who consume bread-based iodine and salt-based iodine. Matter of fact, Australia has had this problem, so they start putting the iodine back in bread. They're ahead of us on this.
And on many things, yeah.
On many things. I mean, they're taking this very seriously. And, you know, iodine deficiency is a leading cause of mental retardation, the leading cause of mental retardation in the world. And even if your child has no mental retardation things, the cognitive skills and the slowness are still impaired by low iodine.
Wow, that's a big thing.
Yes, that's
now.
That's one
shouldn't
of the most
everybody
important
then at least be? See, I have to say one thing. With the hoopla going on about vitamin D, it's actually become pretty mainstream to test everyone for their vitamin D levels when people go to the doctor. I mean, even mainstream doctors are doing it, and every doctor will do it if a patient asks. They're no longer poo-pooed. Every insurance company has to pay for it. What is the status, since people might be hearing the show and going, wow, I wonder how my iodine level is. Is there a way to do a blood test or a level to see how it is?
The best and most definitive test we have right now is what they call the iodine loading test, in which you take some iodine at the beginning of a 24-hour period, then you collect the urine, and they measure how much goes through into the urine. Now, if your body is deficient, it will try to suck up all that iodine that was given in the original tablets at the beginning of the test. If it doesn't need the iodine, it will just you'll just excrete it. But that's the most reliable test. However, one of our local doctors here is now using a blood test. I don't know whether, I mean, so insurance will pay for it.
Okay, so that's very interesting.
Yes,
so a doctor is using a blood test, which is new or unusual, to actually ascertain iodine levels?
Yes, but that's the good news. The bad news is most doctors don't know how to interpret the test.
What do you mean by that?
Well,
because usually when you do any blood tests, and people can, of course, look at their own tests, there's something called a reference range.
Yes.
Which gives, you know, a low and a high number, and you want to be somewhere in the middle. And most people can actually look at that for themselves.
Well, one of the things is the reference range on the blood test is a little lower than we would like to see it compared to the iodine loading test, the urine test.
Okay, and that's
low.
True. See, that's very great information, and that's true with vitamin D as well. All the holistic physicians that I know don't accept the reference range as optimum. So they look at the reference range, and if their patient is towards the low end of the reference range, they will still discuss with their patients the fact that really we want to bring that number up, even though it's appearing to be within the reference range. And that's true with a lot of vitamins because, you know, when we ascertain the levels of these nutrients, what we're usually looking for, and when I say we, I mean more of a mainstream mechanism, is looking at what amount will delay a deficiency, not what amount is optimum.
Yes, the thing is with the reference range that I recently took the blood test to try to check it against the urine test, is they don't understand that there's no real upper range for iodine in the blood test. And that, for example, they'll have just a very narrow reference range. If they were iodine literate, they would know, okay, as long as it's over such and such amount, you're fine. I mean, so they wouldn't have like an upper range where above which the doctor would start calling you and saying, stop that iodine.
Oh, okay. So you're saying it's not so much that people are showing up near the low end, but they're like kind of above the high end.
Yes,
and doctors are feeling that that's excessive.
Yes, and the problem is it puts the doctor in a bad position, because if he prescribes a test that has a high range, and say the high range is, or the end of the good reference range is 70, and the patient comes back with 3,070.
Yeah.
And the patient's feeling great, is not hypothyroid. It puts the doctor in the position of saying, oh my gosh, you're outside the reference range, you have to stop.
So you're saying that something that you would, after having looked into this for many years, is consider optimum would in fact be that far out of the normal reference range? You're talking
yes.
about from 70 to 3,000? That's pretty
yes.
aggressive.
Because the test was not invented for people that were taking iodine. You see, there's all problems with the test. With a blood test. At least you might find out if you're low. According to a couple of doctors that I have spoken to, they say, oh, well, the good news is it's very easy to get the patient reimbursed for this or to get it paid for. But the bad news is it doesn't give you a place to really look at the higher ranges. So it just gives you like the bare minimum. Like,
well, that is important tests. Because truthfully, doctors always, unfortunately, must be aware of legal ramifications.
Yes.
And the thing is, that does put them in a bind, because even if they're holistic and then they have a range like that, I mean, I'm not talking about one or two, you know, like if you mm-hmm. have a cholesterol, most people are familiar with their cholesterol, they say it's supposed to be under 200, and let's say yours is even 250, the doctor really does not have to prescribe statins. He will put a note in his or her chart saying discuss that slightly elevated or elevated cholesterol, but they don't have to say you have to be on statins, although most of them will, which is actually inappropriate. That's a topic for another day. But with some kind of reference range that high, if they don't note that they discussed with you to discontinue supplementation, they can definitely be in a legal bind.
Yes, they can. So I would recommend to doctors, essentially, do not prescribe this test, because you may get results that aren't accurate in terms of what kind of action does the doctor take? What does he recommend to the patient? So I think it's better to just go with the iodine loading test, and the reference range is better. The whole principle of testing is better, because the iodine that's in your blood doesn't necessarily reflect the iodine that's in your brain or your breasts or your prostate or your ovaries or any place. So it may just be running like a highway, you know, just because if you take iodine in the last couple of days, it's going to be in your bloodstream. It probably hasn't gotten saturated into
okay.
the tissues.
Well, that's a great explanation about why you're saying let's not even push that test right now, because the interpretation and the legality of being way too high puts doctors in a bind. So, you know, perhaps we'll go with that loading test. So you know what? We do have to take a break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and when we come back, we will be continuing our interesting discussion with Lynn Farrow, the author of The Iodine Crisis, What You Don't Know About Iodine Can Wreck Your Life. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the folklore, history, chemistry, and medicinal applications of the common kitchen herb, thyme.
common culinary spice known botanically as Thymus vulgaris is only one member of a large genera which includes over 400 species and even more varieties. The Thymus genera is originally native to the Mediterranean region and is a perennial plant which grows wild in usually dry, sandy soil, green heaths, and grasslands. Thyme is a prolific, fragrant, creeping ground cover and often displays an attractive spray of flowering branchlets spanning the spectrum from white to violet.
There is considerable debate amongst historians as to the origin of the name thyme. Some believe it to be from the Greek thymen, meaning to fumigate or to burn a sacrifice, because it was used as a sweet-smelling incense and also to keep pests and venomous creatures away from the Greek home. Others believe it came from the Greek thumos, meaning courage or energy, perhaps because it has a reputation of being used by Greek warriors for courage and was bathed in and used as a beverage for invigoration. The Egyptians used an herb called tham, which we believe is Thymus vulgaris, to mummify their dead. The principal chemical constituents of thyme are the volatile oils consisting of phenol, thymol, and carvacrol. A 1977 article in the scientific journal Chemical Abstracts revealed that thymol's antimicrobial activity is 18 times more powerful than phenol. Phenol is a major antiseptic used in commercial germicidal cleaners like Lysol. Thymol is one of the most potent antimicrobial substances known and far surpasses even the strongest antibiotics. It has been illustrated in the Journal of Chemistry and in the Merck Index of Drugs and Chemicals to destroy parasites, worms, fungi, bacteria, mosquito larvae, and many viruses.
The pharmaceutical and cosmetic industry is privy to the important medicinal effects of oil of Thymus vulgaris. It is ubiquitously found in gargles, cough drops, vapor rubs, and many mouthwashes. Oil of thyme is to be used, albeit very sparingly because of its potency, as a gargle or mouthwash for sore throats and inflamed gums. Because the volatile oil is expelled via the lungs and kidneys, naturopathic physicians use it for upper respiratory infections and urinary tract infections. If you're in the midst of a cold and are lying in bed with too much thyme on your hands, try making a thyme tea made with just a few teaspoons of thyme to a cup of boiling water. It's an excellent diaphoretic because it causes the body to perspire profusely. Thyme also possesses an excellent carminative and antispasmodic effect, helping in poor digestion, flatulence, and intestinal gripe.
So, listeners, if you're feeling ill, thyme heals all wounds. Remember to reach for that thyme in a bottle the next time you open up the Natural Medicine Chest.
And hello, thank you so much for joining us once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I would like to join you either on ground at our many, many lectures all over the country. Lots going on in Florida, but we have presentations all over the country and the world, very much so in the New York area over the summer months, where we go outside and gather edible and medicinal plants that are growing wild and make them into your own food and medicine. One of the best ways to learn about something that is not only fun, but also part of a natural survival technique. We've also written many books about that. Please go to naturalnurse.com under books, and you'll see that Dr. Zamperone and I wrote a book called The Natural Medicine Chest, which does discuss how you can gather wild plants and make them into your own foods and medicine. We also wrote many other books, including Weight Loss, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, and that book, as well as Arthritis, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, which is a bestseller in terms of arthritis therapies, discusses the thyroid gland and the use of iodine therapeutically to help the thyroid gland in its many, many mechanisms of action, which are really important. Also, we're about to take off on our Jamaica trip. That's leaving on March 15th. That's just around the corner. And if you'd like to join us to visit the island of Jamaica and live with shamanic bush doctors for a few days and get college credits to do so, please get in touch. Go to naturalnurse.com. And we invite you to like us on Facebook. That's at Facebook/naturalnurse. And we'd love to hear from you. We love your comments. And if you have anything you'd like to say, we always get all positive comments, I have to say. I love positive comments. But if you have a, you know, some kind of criticism or constructive criticism, we like to call it, we'd love to hear that, too. We just don't get too many of those. So we're really happy that we're fulfilling many of your needs and wants. So we love getting that kind of feedback. We also have an online course available, which many people are now taking, and you will get a certification after the 5-hour course in a topic of your choice, including topics such as botanical medicine at any level, anything from outside herbal identification to learning about the mechanisms of action in botanical pharmacology. And many people are taking those classes, and sometimes they're taking one series after another. Each 5 hours gets you a certification in a particular topic of your choice designed for you. You can take the course alone or in a group of five, and you can find out more about the course at naturalnurse.com, education. You just click on the education tab. We're also doing a lot of career counseling. More and more people are finding that they would like to make their living in natural medicine, and they're wondering what is their best path forward to get themselves in a position to be able to do that. And so we have a full session of career counseling in natural medicine. So for information about that, go to naturalnurse.com under services. So all kinds of things. We'd love to interact with you on any level. And thank you so much for joining us for our show today. We are discussing today the book, The Iodine Crisis, What You Don't Know About Iodine Can Wreck Your Life. And our guest is the author of this book, Lynn Farrow. She's a journalist, researcher, former college professor, and speaker. And she herself had an experience with breast cancer, which led her to the discovery about this fabulous intervention, which has been with us since the beginning of time, very well proven, reaching back 15,000 years, and that is the use of iodine. So thank you so much for joining us today, Lynn.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, tell us a little bit about your own health journey, which actually led you to the discovery about what I guess you would call the underuse of iodine therapeutically.
Well, what happened was I was diagnosed with breast cancer after many years of having fibrocystic breast disease and being told, oh, that's normal. And I thought, well, if it's a disease, how can it be normal? And they said, well, it's normal because it's common. And one of the things that was common in the 1800s was syphilis. And I thought, well, they weren't calling that normal. So there's, you know, there was a kind of party line in the medical profession. If they see a lot of disease, they just sort of forget about it and assume that it's in the normal, in quotes, reference range, like we were talking about before. So I had complained for years and had it confirmed that I had fibrocystic breast disease. And I had needle biopsies, which you shouldn't do. And so finally I was diagnosed with breast cancer and tried to do some research. Since I'm fairly good at this research stuff, I tried to find the evidence for the recommendations that I was given. And I found out there wasn't as much documented evidence as there were treatment guidelines or consensus-based medicine called standard of care. So when I looked, you know, further and further, I thought, this is just not compelling. I mean, it may be that you guys have decided this is a good idea, but I would like to have a little more statistical validation that there's a good chance that you're going to help me with conventional medicine like radiation and chemotherapy. Well, I quickly found out that radiation had no survival value, but it had just like a local recurrence value. And you don't die of local recurrence. You die when the disease spreads. So that got me on my own journey. I refused the radiation and chemotherapy and just stuck with the surgery. But since I found out about this whole consensus medicine versus...
Now, wait, I want to stop you there a minute, and
okay.
then we'll continue. So you did do the surgery
yes.
because some of these fibrocysts that you had had ongoingly did show up as cancerous when they were tested.
Yes.
But you opted... Now, did they want to do the chemo and radiation and you refused it?
Yes.
Or did they say... It might not be indicated in this case since the data does not show a good outcome.
No, they said it was absolutely indicated because I had an aggressive kind of breast cancer.
And so you had to stand up. A lot of people find that very difficult.
Well, at the time, it was very difficult. I don't want to make it, in retrospect, it may sound like I'm being flip here, but I'm certainly not. I was scared to death. I thought... They must know what they're doing.
You reviewed the data, and
yeah,
you
and
found
I,
that in this particular case, with the particular chemotherapy agents they were recommending, there really is not, you know, any kind of great outcome data. And when you showed that to them, what did they say?
Well, first of all, it was hard to get any. I said, well, what studies are you referencing in order to make this recommendation to me? And they said, well, I don't have the studies, but my mentor has the studies, something, you know, that to that effect. In other words, the other guy knows. I don't know, but I'm making the recommendation anyway. So when I did review the studies, and one of the things about conventional medicine is many things are studied and they're documented. That's the good news. When you actually read the studies, they show very, very poor response or sort of overall, what they call overall survival value. That is, will you be above ground in 10 years? So that was like a lesson learned for me, and I went around to medical conferences, integrative conferences mainly, and tried to learn as much as I could because I thought, well, I've got to try just as hard doing an integrative or an alternative program as I would if I had gone the conventional route. So in my journey to get as much information as possible, I was at an ACAM conference, and I ran into a doctor, an osteopath called Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and she knew I had started an organization called Breast Cancer Choices by then, and she said, have you people looked into iodine? And my eyes glazed over, and I was insulted. I thought, you know, I've pretty much looked into everything that's in the alternative world for breast cancer. If iodine was any help, believe me, I would know about it. So I was taken back, but... Thank God I tried not to let my ego get in the way, and she was telling me about fibrocystic breast disease and these dramatic cases she had. And so I thought, you know, if it was anybody else, I probably wouldn't go back and do research. But I went home. I allotted 2 weeks to research iodine and breast cancer. Well, that turned into 2 months, which turned into 2 years. And I just have become passionate about the research that was done and how far back the traditional use of iodine or seaweed-based iodine is for the breast.
So that's amazing. Now you're saying seaweed-based in particular.
Well, when you go back 15,000 years, iodine hadn't been isolated yet, but its most concentrated form was in seaweed.
Right.
And then in the 1800s, when the seaweed was burnt to make gunpowder and they isolated iodine, it very quickly became the number one medicine in the golden age of iodine. Van Gogh took iodine and wrote to his brother Theo, who also had syphilis. They both had, saying, oh, you've got to take this iodine. It will really help you with your syphilis. So it was the sort of standard of care back then, but it was also used for many other things. It's a kind of new universal nutrient.
Okay. So now then you read this because Dr. Tenpenny mentioned it and you researched it and you found out, wow, there is a lot of data. It just isn't being promoted.
It isn't being promoted. And then I found out there was a paper written in 1948 that said iodine was a poison, even though there had been other documentation that iodine, you know, if you give iodine to rats and try to give them cancer, they won't get cancer. It just blocks the ability of them to get cancer. There are all sorts of studies out there, but for some reason, the studiers, the authors of the study, weren't promoting their information. I really don't understand how there could be so many studies out there, and it didn't make its way out to the public. However, so this there was an article called the Wolff-Chaikoff effect was something that, as I said, in 1948, this doctor wrote a paper about, and that was accepted into medical schools, and the axiom was that iodine will shut down the thyroid. So that was widely believed from every generation of doctors that went through medical school since then, believe that it's a poison. Even though the whole, you know, the 100 years of between the 1800s and the 1900s, that it was used medicinally for practically everything, that this one study seemed to cancel out the whole tradition of iodine medicine.
And we often see that. But that does make it more difficult, because if somebody is mentioning to their physician that they plan to use it therapeutically, they're probably going to get pushback.
Well, you can send, your doctor, you could give your doctor Dr. Brownstein's book, who's a medical doctor who's been on this for years. There's a lot of resources now, and three physicians about 10 years ago decided that they were going to challenge the so-called Wolff-Chaikoff effect, that iodine was toxic. And they just did this huge, they called it the Iodine Project, and they just pulled together all the literature and said, you're wrong, medical establishment, look. And they did this all by conventional publishing and research. In other words, they reviewed all the medical literature and said, look, here's the way it is. And that's just fortuitously, I got in at the same time. I had been researching it since Sherry Tenpenny told me about it. And then these doctors were also just quietly having this project going that they were publishing on. And it suddenly there was the ability, because of the internet, to popularize a traditional medicine that had been buried and vilified. And so one of the things that a patient advocate like myself can do is can go on the internet and say, look at this, look at that, this is what so-and-so has done, and more testimonials came forth on the internet. So it became a movement. People got such good results for things that they had for 20 years sometimes that you couldn't stop it. So this sort of helped the doctors, because they were sort of, hogtied by... Not they didn't want to lose their licenses or anything.
Well, it's a big concern.
Yes.
So you know what? We actually have one more break to do right now, because we love to allow all the fabulous shows right here on PRN, Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, to have a shout out so that you know all the ones you can listen to. We love when you join us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we are live. We often take call-ins. In fact, we'll take some call-ins if anyone wants to call today in terms of our show on iodine, and the call-in number is 888-874-4888, and we'll take your calls when we come back. If you'd like to call in and ask myself or our guest, Lynn Farrow, a question about the iodine crisis. So we're live now. But what's so great about Progressive Radio Network is that this show will be archived, so it's something you want a friend to listen to, as well as all the fabulous shows right here on Progressive Radio Network. So you can listen to the archive day or night. You could download the shows onto your, those devices you guys have. I don't have one. I don't know what they are, iPods or pads or whatever. And listen anytime, day or night, 24/7. So let's go to listen to some of the other wonderful offerings right here on Progressive Radio Network. And welcome to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Please visit us at naturalnurse.com. Check out all our offerings. Look at our blog for free information and articles. Look at our books and our courses under education, or our schedule to join us in person. I love when people come up to me and say, hi, I heard you on Progressive Radio Network, and here I am in Michigan or Chicago or Florida. So this station is fabulous and really bringing the information to people interested in truth and natural living. And today we have as our guest Lynn Farrow, and we're talking about her fascinating book called The Iodine Crisis, What You Don't Know About Iodine Can Wreck Your Life. And if you're finding this show interesting, I very much recommend Lynn's book. And I do want to tell you that, Lynn, I'm so happy that while it's not really large print, it's pretty large. In other words, I only like to read books when I sit around and read at night that are large print books. I don't wear glasses, and I'm well into my 60s. But your book, does it? It's not like single type tiny where you can't get through it. It's very easy to read.
Well, thank you. I tried to make it easy to read, and I wanted to make it a page-turner because I had, you know, been in journalism my whole life, and I thought, you know, you can't get somebody to read something unless you make it interesting and compelling. And I wanted it to read like a story, and it really is a story.
It is, and there's lots of little charts and clues along the way and telling you how you can look to using iodine yourself. And I'll tell you, we did ask for calls, and we have some calls on the line. So, callers, we do want to keep to this topic, the iodine topic. So I am going to bring you on, and we'll discuss your question if it has to do with our topic for today. So, Pauline from Queens, welcome to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Hi, thank you. I'd like to know, how do we get a clean source of seaweed? I'm a little afraid with the, you know, with the radiation coming out of Japan. A lot of the seaweed in the Oriental countries are very, I would think, toxic. I'd be afraid to buy
them. I have an answer for that. As you know, we do wild crafting. Where I get my seaweed is I walk over to the ocean and pick it up. That's where I get it. And people say, well, isn't it polluted? Well, on Long Island, I look at the water. It looks pretty clean. We get beautiful fish out of it. When I'm here in Florida, the same thing. Do I know there's absolutely no toxins in that water? No way. I live on the planet. There's no place on the planet that is not somewhat toxic. However, would I rather go right over, have my energy field interact with that seaweed, find it in the water, bring it up and look at it and go, wow, this looks nice and clean and healthy? Or do I want one that's hanging in a grocery store nicely in plastic from Fukushima?
Thank you.
So, you know, that's what I would do, is learn to collect your own. That's going to be your best source of seaweed, in my opinion. What would you say to that, Lynn?
Well, there's a real problem, because one of the great things about seaweed is it has something like a symporter that has a fantastic ability to draw iodine from seawater. There's not that much iodine in seawater, but the seaweed will suck it up very, very efficiently. But the mechanism that lets it suck up iodine efficiently is also the mechanism that lets it suck up oil dispersants, arsenic, and bromide. So you have to be very careful. You know, I too live walking distance from a bounty of richness from seaweed, so it disappoints me. One of the problems to the sea, what you did is you get it very fresh, and then it doesn't lose its iodine. But should you buy it dry or in capsules or something like that, the iodine evaporates very quickly, and so it's not a reliable source of iodine, seaweed. It would have been 30 years ago, without hesitation, I would say, you know, do like the Japanese do. They eat seaweed all day long. Now, the seaweed on the west coast of the U.S. is really contaminated badly. There may be pockets of clean seaweed, but you have to be careful what you're getting. And the people that say they test it, I don't know what they test it for. And it's processed between the time they manufacture it to the time you get it. There's a problem. So I would say, even if you do take seaweed and you think it's reasonably clean and fresh, also take an iodine supplement besides, because the difference, the amount of iodine you'll get, is very reliable in the element. This is not like a complicated medicine. Iodine is an element. So I would recommend taking the iodine additionally.
So I want you to mention, because I know you talk about a specific one, which is really an old-fashioned remedy, and it's not expensive. So why don't you share that information?
No, it's so cheap that it's embarrassing. You can get a bottle of Lugol's iodine, which is the same thing that they used for everything in the 1830s and 40s and 50s and right through the Civil War, for like $10 or $12 on the internet.
So it's called Lugol's Solution.
Lugol's Iodine Solution. That's Lugol apostrophe S. Just, you can Google it, or you can Google it on Amazon.com. They sell it. Jay Clark's is a really old formula from, manufacturer. He's, the quality is guaranteed. They're up in Vermont. But other people, it's not rocket science to make Lugol's Solution, so, and it's incredibly cheap. So there's really no excuse to not take something that's so important.
Well, thank you. That's a great answer. And we do have another caller now, and we have time maybe for one or two more callers. So let's bring on board Walter from Virginia. Hi, Walter. You're on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Thank you. I was wondering, iodine, is that also good for the entire body, promoting the entire health, body and mind, not just for people with cancer or so,
That's a great question, Walter. Iodine is in every cell of your body. That's probably why it's so good for, a number of things. It's not, I just happen to have breast cancer. I found that, thank God my breast cancer is in remission, but I found the biggest bang came when I took the 50 milligrams for the iodine loading test, and the brain fog I had had for like 15 years or more, and the headaches went away. I lost weight, because my metabolism was very slow because I was iodine deficient. So I got headaches, brain fog, a weight loss, little fatty tumors that I had on my body. Just a number of things went away in the pursuit of trying to use a first-line therapy for breast cancer. So I'm sure, it's not just for women. I get letters from men who use it for benign prostate disease. I use it for erectile dysfunction. Just many, many things.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for your call. And thank you, callers, because your calls were completely appropriate to our discussion for today. And you have just so much great information in this book, The Iodine Crisis. And thank you for sharing about Lugol's Solution. So, how can people get more information if they found this topic interesting today?
If you want to pursue more information about it, there's a Facebook group. There's discussion groups on Facebook. The group that I'm in and out of, but it has a huge number of experts and people that are brand new to iodine, it's called Iodine Workshop. So if you search down that group, join it, and you can just lurk or you can ask questions, do anything you want, and so you'll get an overview that people that are taking iodine or interested in taking iodine, those questions will be available to you.
Now, since doctors seem to think, because of, as you said, perhaps review of incorrect research, that it's toxic, and, would they be telling people, wow, you better watch out? What are some of the possible side effects to overdoing it?
There are no sort of overdose symptoms from taking iodine. What there is a detox problem that about half of the people have, and that is when you take iodine, you displace bromide, and you might feel a little sick, your nose might run, you might have a headache, that kind of thing. But those are the main, we have even a list of on breastcancerchoices.org, we have a list of iodine-related detox side effects. But it's mainly because of the detoxification process that's so strong with iodine, depending how much you take, of course.
Well, what would be? What would be something that would probably reduce the incidence of even those mild adverse effects?
Well, if you take unprocessed sea salt in water in a certain ratio that's on the iodine protocol, you will get rid of those side effects very quickly. You could get rid of a headache or runny nose or just a number of things. When I first took iodine, my hip started to hurt out of nowhere, and I thought, oh, my gosh, how am I getting arthritis in my hip? Of course, I stopped, and it went away in 2 days. But so there's a variety of little side effects that might stop a person from taking iodine unless they know it's detox and they know how to remedy the detox. But that's what the support groups are for, because a lot of these people have been through the exact thing, and they can help you out. Sometimes more vitamin C will help the salt water detox the bromide.
Some people are absolutely allergic to iodine.
You can't be allergic to elemental iodine per se. They might be allergic to the CAT scan dye or the dyes that are used in radioactive studies. Totally different molecule.
Uh-oh, I'm hearing the end music. So that means
okay. We
have to go. So thank you so much for joining us. Visit us at Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or www.naturalnurse.com, or find Lynn Farrow at breastcancerchoices.org or iodineresearch.com. And again, thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.